Jonathan again with Alexis, or Lexi. If you have tuned into That Guy's Mom before, our last episode, we've been talking with this young lady, 27 years old, married, two children, and I can say happily married, and today we're going to find out why and the journey that she has been on. But we are here with That Guy's Mom, and if you want more information about who That Guy's Mom is and who that guy is, we encourage you to go to www.themattmayerstory.com. There you will find incredible writings, some from Matt, who is in prison, some from Anne herself, and from others in prison. So there's plenty of resources there, plus other shows. So if this is the first time or second time you've listened with us, you'll want to pick up some of those other shows, because sometimes life, it just gets to be a tragedy. And how do we make it through those? I get that asked that a lot. My name is Scott. I'm a pastor, and I'm the co-host here. So Anne, it's great to hear this story, isn't it?
Oh, I'm so excited. It's funny because I'm in the same church with Lexi, and I had no clue about her story. And this really has changed my, you know, how you have perceptions about people. And the other thing is she's been through a lot in her young life. I'm thinking 27? Are you serious? So I am excited to hear the second part of this, because I also was left with a cliffhanger. And so when Scott resumes his questions, I have a few of my own, and I can't wait to hear how this all plays out.
So, Lexi, young age, you had innocence stolen. There was an emptiness. There was a hurt and a pain. Obviously, drugs, alcohol came into play, especially drugs. And by 16, you were in rehab. Then by 19, you were married. And by just before your 21st birthday, your husband deploys. So now you're in military life, mm-hmm. or as a military wife, and as I think we hit on before, it's just like the TV shows.
Yeah, so, or not at all like the TV shows.
And so your husband leaves, mm-hmm. you're young, you're married, and now you're alone. What has life all of a sudden dealt you in that?
I will say that I think that it was during this time that my prayer life got right. You know, this is how I learned to pray, because I certainly had something to pray for. I was alone. You know, it was a very isolating experience. I mean, I certainly had family and friends who were loving and supportive, but it's a very unique experience that nobody else can really understand. You know, that fear of when you're going to bed at night and you haven't heard from your husband in 3 weeks, waiting for that knock on the door, you know, so it really did bring me closer to God in my prayer life, you know, wanting to keep him close to me.
Now, in and out of your story, drugs have been a big part of it. Well, no, I wanted to bring one other point up that you probably wouldn't talk about if I didn't. What did you do for a job during this time?
I decided at the time to try to take advantage, and this was some advice given to me by some other military wives. You know, it's difficult, and none of us choose, certainly, to have our husbands be away. But if that is the circumstance you're dealt, or he happens to be deployed at the moment, you know, you try to use that time, you know, to take care of yourself, or maybe pursue some dreams that you wouldn't want to do if you did have him there to distract you. But during this time, I was modeling, which was certainly interesting and fascinating and exciting and fast-paced and all those things that you might think it is, but also full of evil and sin as well. So an interesting experience. But
you did some modeling during that time.
And yes, I did.
So not only are you young, your husband's gone, you're a model. I mean, that's like some kind of you're supposed to be running around to parties and Vogue and all that stuff. So, but you miss your husband,
mm-hmm.
and he's getting ready to come home. What mm-hmm. happens?
Coming home is hard. You know, I think that any military wife can attest to that. You know, there are a lot of expectations, some of them probably completely ridiculous. I think it's silly to have any kind of expectations in that situation. You know, but Stephen had a very eventful deployment. You know, he's right in the thick of it. I'd be lucky if he was on a base for longer than 3 days at a time so that I could actually talk to him. I mean, he spent most of the time in the desert sleeping under his truck, trying to not get shot at. You know, so unfortunately for me, I didn't have a chef in the Army or a cook who lived on a base. You know, it was a very intense experience. So when he came home, that was very difficult. That process of adjustment was difficult for both of us.
Before you came home, about 3 months before you came home, what happened? Was it about 3 months that you started using again?
Yes, there was a relapse in there. A very good friend of mine that I had grown up, beautiful girl, her name was Lindsay, had killed herself. She hung herself. She actually was very drunk and sat in a closet and tied a shirt around her neck and passed out that way and died, suffocated. So they deemed it to be an accidental death, but, you know, obviously took her own life. So that was very difficult. I was in a very dark place at that time. And there was a relapse at that time, yes.
So when Stephen came home, what state were you in as far as your addiction?
As far as the addiction, I mean, I think that at that time in my life, I had convinced myself that it was controllable, that it was something that I could use when I wanted to and, you know how to turn off that switch when I didn't want to be that person, which anybody out there who is an addict will know is foolish. So it was very difficult, and I was honest with him. I mean, at the time, I remember him calling from Afghanistan and me kind of confessing that sin to him that I had relapsed and used. But at the time that he came home, I was not using, no. Just working hard and cleaning my house like a crazy woman, trying to get ready for my husband to come home from Afghanistan.
So transition from being out in the field and coming home, and transition from him being in that environment, intense as it was, and then you being alone, all of a sudden now having the man back in the house. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of transition.
Very difficult. And I think that, you know, in the Army, it's very difficult as well to maybe be honest or seek maybe help that you may need when it is difficult, what you've gone through or what you've experienced. So there were definitely some trying moments there, you know, sometimes in the middle of the night when he would wake up and genuinely think that I was there to kill him. I mean, you could just see it on his face. Like, you know, so that's hard as a wife to watch that and not know how to help, especially when they're not exactly wanting to talk about it, especially not, you're probably the last person they want to talk to about. They want to keep that relationship pure. I'm sure he didn't want to color the way that I saw him, you know, so it was very difficult transitioning there. And for him, you know, my husband never really had any drug history to speak of, but that was the way that he sought to deal with what he had gone through.
So it hadn't been much of his makeup till now. And right. Your husband didn't get shot while he was in Afghanistan, but he came home wounded.
Right.
And we talk about it way more now because we understand it a little better, but we don't understand it completely, what the post-traumatic stress does for men who've been away at war. And your husband being one of those who was in the very high impact, high stress type of area, undoubtedly it affected him, changed him, and there was a lot going on. And so when he came home, life all of a sudden took a radical change, and drugs once again became a part of both your lives.
Yes, probably really shouldn't be surprised. But yeah, the irony there is that for once it wasn't me seeking it out. But yes, there was a moment where that definitely shifted. And I certainly wasn't going to let him do all the drugs by himself. So there I was, you know, and it's interesting because I think that through our prior conversations, you know, and us talking about my past history, you know, Stephen did know that heroin had been my drug of choice. And so when he went out into the surrounding city, to the street, to buy drugs, he was seeking heroin, but what he actually ended up with was crack, which is drug of choice.
Which you knew the difference.
I knew the difference.
But he didn't.
He did not. Yeah. You know, so it was an interesting moment. And, you know, again, just trying to convince myself that it was something that I could control, which when you know God, you know that you really don't control anything. But, you know, I think it was probably a couple of weeks before we were using it every day and completely out of control. I would say 2.5 months he had failed a piss test, been sentenced or sent to rehab, came back and relapsed and was, you know, sentenced to jail. He spent some time in jail for that.
Now, he got in trouble before that.
He did, yes. He got, I believe the way that it happened was he had gone down one night to pick up some more and got pulled over. They didn't actually find anything on him, but what they do is they call your commanding officer, which is probably the worst thing he could do. I think I remember him telling me he would have rather spent the night in jail, you know, but it doesn't take much in the Army. And then from that step forward, that was when they decided to drug test him. And he obviously failed, you know, when in the Army or in any branch of military service, you know, if you piss hot, then they consider that possession. It's in your body. They own you. So you possess it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he actually was charged with possession, even though he was never actually, let's say, busted,
right,
you know, with it on his person, per se.
And during this time, of course, it was all real easy on you.
Oh, yeah. So easy.
What else happened during that time? Now, we're talking about a three-month period.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put this in your words that you've shared with me before. In 3 months, you destroyed your lives, mm-hmm, and ended up $50,000 in debt.
Oh, yes. We would have done anything to sustain our habit. We were writing bad checks, both of us together,
on base
at a military shop. We would go to the grocery, you know, the military grocery store, AFE's, and write these bad checks. I mean, I think we got away with that for about a month, and between our two accounts had totaled about $40,000 in debt, just in the bad checks. That doesn't even include maxing out the credit cards, the other means that we tried to seek out for ways to get money to support our habit. Because at one point, I would say it was about $300 a day.
Wow.
A day. We'd be awake for days at a time. No sleep. You're going to talk about Satan. You know, that's really the devil right there. The kind of person that you can be when you haven't slept for 3 days. So, you know, it was not an awesome time in my life.
No, and we understand the pain and the guilt and some of the stuff, the scars you carry from that. And a lot of our listeners have some of that same, you know. Our past, sometimes we think it's bigger and uglier than our God.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it got worse, didn't it?
Yeah, it did get worse, unfortunately. You know, towards the end of this experience, actually, I want to say that it was the last week. Now it's coming to me. It was the last week that Stephen was in rehab. I was offered an opportunity to go to rehab with him, and like a dummy, I declined that opportunity. So he was shipped away for about a month to a local rehab facility, and I decided to try to get clean on my own, which worked for about 3 weeks. I had the right heart, but I didn't have any tools. I didn't have any system. I didn't have any support. You know, I was trying to do it all by myself. And I met a gentleman at my job who was a regular. He used to come in and sit down and drink. I was bartending at the time, and I actually ended up having an affair with this person right after I began using, right before my husband came back from rehab. So it's probably, in my eyes, the most shameful thing that I've ever done, and something that I'm quite honestly still working through.
Sure, sure.
It's not something that I even was that crazy to share, but I feel in my heart, like I know that it happened to me for a reason.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to remind you what I shared earlier with us is that guilt is often when we've done something wrong. Shame is when we think we are something wrong and you're not. You know, shame is, I think, a tool Satan uses, really. And we have a lot of listeners, I'm sure, that walk around with shame. And shame is something God wants to take away and heal us from. And it's very obvious that this is still a big wound for you and for your family, for you and your husband.
Absolutely.
And, but like you said, you know, as we've talked, whether you should share that or not, it is a very important part of not your past to glorify that, but what God has done then in your future. So then let me just sort of fill in some pieces from there. Your husband spent some time in military prison. Mm-hmm. I believe that's when I met him.
Yeah,
was
yeah.
Right before that. We also, I want to mention this because I know your husband, I love him to death. I have a lot of respect for him and what he's done and what he's done for our country. And he had acclimates and did his job well. He served honorably.
Absolutely.
You know, not to fault him for, I don't know how I could handle what he's had to do. And what our military's had to do and what they see and what they go through, we don't understand it unless you've been there. And I would never pretend to. But this obviously served to complicate the issue.
Absolutely.
And you kept it from your husband for a long time, right? But you are a very honest person. So
yeah.
What was it like telling your husband?
I don't think I kept it from him that long.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. You were being sarcastic there. Well, no, that's just not it. And I loved him, and I know that for some of you that's going to sound very crazy. You know, it was definitely a choice. I would never put it on anyone else. I mean, that was a poor decision that I made, and I will own that poor decision or poor decisions. But it was definitely related to my drug use and directly. I believe, you know, for him, maybe it would have been something else. But for me, that's what it was. So, no, I told him almost immediately, and you can only imagine the pain that caused. Truly madly in love with each other, but just not capable of working through that one on our own.
Now, there's a span of time, quite a bit of time then, between then and when I met you.
Yeah.
And when I met you, one of the things you wanted was to be baptized. And there was another gift that you had.
Yeah. Yes, I was pregnant at the time. I think that was really the turnaround for me. That was my hope. And at the time, I didn't even know. I remember going, God, how could you do this to me? You know, my body is ravaged. I can't even take care of myself. I need to take care of another life. Mm. Without actually physically removing myself from that situation, I can't even sit here and honestly tell you that I think I would have stopped using. You know, my firstborn could have been a crack baby. I mean, even now that seems very surreal to me, that this is my life and this is my story. But, you know, finding that out was very intense. And at that time decided to go ahead and move here to live closer to my mom.
Right.
To get clean.
And get some support.
I get some support, you know, why Stephen was serving his time and making the amends that he needed to make.
Right.
In that instance. And he joined me when he was done serving his time. But, you know, this had complicated things. The affair had complicated things a lot. And it was something, you know, obviously he needed to reach out to his family for support as well, dealing with that betrayal. So it just became very difficult.
Sure.
From then.
And home life was really easy and good.
Yeah, really easy, really good, lots of fun. No, I actually had my firstborn when Stephen was incarcerated still. And he came home about 30 days later,
right.
I want to say. You know, so no, that was very challenging. You know, the last time that we had been together, I was maybe 6 weeks pregnant. You know, we obviously were living a much different life.
Right. So you're both on a different path now, trying to get life cleaned up. But it's a strained relationship.
It's better than it's ever been. You know, this is where, to me, this is the point. You know, this is even still new and still being revealed to me every day. I mean, I'm in this amazing stage of my life where I just can't even believe the blessings that God is pouring out for me, or the blessing that my husband actually loves me.
Yeah. So again. Let's go back about 2 years ago. Because then you had another child.
Yes.
Little girl.
Yes.
Beautiful little girl. But things at home are still tough.
Yes.
And the interpersonal relationship's not going well.
You know, my first, you know, advice for anybody going through this is find a church. Not just any church, a good church. A church where you feel like you can get support, because I know that was the first step for us. I mean, my mother literally shoved me into your office and shut the door behind me. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I do.
Shut the door behind me. My mom was like, okay, there you go, Alexis. Have fun. Bye.
Yeah, right.
And shut the door behind me. And, you know, sometimes there are all those people in your journey along the way, and sometimes it's your mom, and sometimes it's somebody you don't even know who kind of forces you through that door, even though you want to walk through it, but you're just not ready yet. And that was the first step for me, was being honest about that. And it forced me to, you called me out in church once, you know, and not specifically, but a pregnant woman whose husband who is in jail and is recovering from a drug addiction. And I remember being like,
we prayed for you.
I'm the only pregnant one here. Thanks so much, Pastor Scott. But you hold me accountable. You kept me honest. You kept me from putting up that wall to the people around me who were capable of helping me. I would have only been denying myself that. You know, Stephen and I continued to try to work on our relationship. And at that time, I know his family thought he was crazy for even coming here to be with me. And in the beginning, maybe it was just because of our son. And there was a couple years of a very abusive, unhealthy relationship going on where I had all this guilt and shame. And he felt like he wanted to hurt me because I hurt him.
Sure.
And so there's just this constant cycle and me feeling like I deserve it and allowing that to happen. And this person who loves me madly but is hurt and telling me how awful I am. And,
right.
You know, so that was very difficult. And we did awful things to each other. I'm certainly not absolving what I did, but I was not alone in this.
Yeah.
We're two adults, you know, and that was the tricky part with that, was working through that.
And so you guys arrived at an interesting conclusion just over a year and a half ago to separate.
Yes.
And tell me how that you arrived there and where did your husband end up?
I remember the moment when I realized that it just had to happen because we had been fighting, obviously, thinking that we were out of earshot of our children, which was obviously not the case because I'll just never forget Lucas talking to me just like Stephen. And then that was such a wake up call for me that we were affecting our children, mm-hmm. That I was raising my children in an unhealthy environment and realizing that the lesser evil would be to separate and or divorce and give them a shot at two happy parents separate. So that, yes, was a necessary step, I believe, at the time for us to separate because it had just become so toxic.
Right. And so you separate for what was about a year and a half.
Yeah, I think it was about a year and a half or a little under. There was some time in the beginning, you know, where neither one of us really, I think, wanted to let go or it just feels normal or it feels right because it's been that way for a while. So without really doing any kind of work on ourselves or in our relationship, you know, there was definitely that time where I think he came back for about a week. And that was about how long we lasted before we were back at each other's throats. And it certainly wasn't an easy process. There was a lot of anger and resentment. God moved there. And in this specific instance, I'm not even really sure how.
Isn't that amazing?
You would have asked me 3 months ago, I would have told you that there was no way that I did not love him. Actually, I know that I told people that I didn't love him anymore.
Yeah.
And now I'm so full of love that I feel like I'm 19 again.
And I know that he would say, how could I ever trust her?
Right.
This is the marriage bond that was broken.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the mistrust and, you know, we all have our baggage. So he's dealing with his stuff and trying to work and trying to support and deal with those feelings and emotions.
Absolutely.
And it was caustic. And I think at this point, one of the things that I would point out is no matter where, how dark it gets, when we have a faith and trust in God, he can work in any situation. Because I know, honestly, there were times when I would talk to either of you and feel a sense of hopelessness, even in myself, for you, and going, oh, God, how can you work in this? And then to find out just a couple weeks ago, something changed. What changed a couple weeks ago, about 3 or 4 weeks ago?
You know, I don't know. He moved back home. We had come to a place. I mean, I'll just never forget. I was leaving actually for the weekend with my children to go visit, you know, my father. And he told me he loved me. And I remember throwing an attitude at him. What is wrong with you? Don't you start that again. You know, the last thing I need is another cycle. Don't drag me back into this. I've decided that I don't love you. So don't do that. And he was really relentless in that. And then I started to believe him. And then I started to realize that I loved him too. You know, it took a lot of time. You know, this process, it took us 4.5 years to get to this place after what happened to us, after what I did, after what he did, after 3 months of nothing but destructive behavior. It has taken me longer than 4 years to try to build my life back to even the starting place that I was before, as far as the world is concerned.
How destructive. All the drugs and decisions. And, you know, it really is true. Wide is the path to destruction, narrows the path to eternal life.
I'd like to just add some couple little thoughts here, because a lot of times when we were facilitating a marriage class, and there were couples that were having difficulties. And for those of you out there that may be hearing some of these terms as separation, oftentimes people separate to divorce. But basically what you guys did was your separation actually led to your restoration. And when you're in an unhealthy marriage or a relationship, and I've advised women to do this, if you need to, you need to draw a boundary line and separate, but not to divorce, but to restore. And sometimes that takes a number of years, and it won't happen overnight. But if you have that as your goal out there, that it's not going to be the end, it's going to be the beginning of something that needs to be changed that's unhealthy, then that's positive. And that's what you guys wound up doing. And another thing, I like what you said, and it reminded me of one of the stories in the Bible with Hosea and God telling him actually to marry a prostitute because he wanted to show a live illustration in the word of what God's marriage to us is. So we being the prostitute, we being the sinners, we being the ones who've turned our back on him. And one of the things you said about your husband was that he was relentless. And that's a beautiful term. When we're relentless for our relationship, because of the fact that maybe we have children, we've had this relationship for years, and now we want to restore it no matter what. And I think that whatever it is, whoever's out there listening to this story and you're feeling your heart rate increase because you're relating to some of the storylines in this, think about being relentless to, number one, a God who wants to see restoration, but also to that person who may have hurt you or you may have hurt them. And continue regardless of what that person gives you back. That's what really selfless love is. That's what God's love towards us looks like. And I think the fact that he was being so relentless is exactly what you said started to make you go, well, wait a minute. Maybe there is something here.
It's funny because I never even thought about it that way. But yeah, the separation, that definitely, I think, is a priority. If you were to that place, that if you separate, not to jump right into another relationship, you do not give yourself time. You know, I, at the beginning of that, all I wanted to do was be a good mother and remember who I was, you know, after everything I had been through, and then just putting on and being strong for my children. You know, I wanted to remember who I was, and he needed to remember who he was and work through his relationship with God and, you know, me with mine. So, I think that it was a absolutely necessary step. Maybe not for everyone, but in this situation, I believe that it really worked. And without it, we wouldn't be where we are.
And, you know, we just, to remind everybody, God is the one who transforms hearts. You know, you didn't think you could ever love your husband again. Mm-hmm. And I thought you were, I don't think you touched the ground as you, I saw you Sunday, and you showed me something that you'd gotten for Christmas.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so anybody that knows me knows I love jewelry. And I've been checking out this ring, and I'm thinking, wow, her ring's beautiful. Very. Is this the Christmas present?
This is the Christmas present. I got a couple of days after Christmas. I believe it was being sized. But you could definitely call me shocked. I'm pretty sure a small loan had to happen to...
But what does it represent?
It's very symbolic for us because during our drug addiction, some of the first things to go, anybody out there who's been there knows that you will pawn your jewelry in a second, even the pieces that maybe mean a lot to you. So unfortunately, all of our rings were lost in the process. So I have been walking around for 4 years being married, never having a ring.
Oh, and it's a beautiful diamond engagement ring. It's gorgeous.
I think he'll claim me back. I think.
I love it. Well, see, we really do have a fairy tale ending here. Pretty soon he's going to come riding in on his horse, pick her up, and ride right out.
I hope so.
We really want you to know, though, that this has been a hard story for Lexi to really open up her heart to so many of us, because I know she realizes there's value in sharing this for other people who may have similar threads running in their life. And so we thank you, Lexi. Again, I'm going to look at this girl way different in church now, which I think is awesome, because I've always wondered, she has such a spirit about her that makes the room lighten up and liven up, and she's amazing. And I think a lot of times broken people who have lots of pieces that have been put back together by our God seem to shine that light through those cracks. And so we're happy that we have a new crackpot with us that we know about. And as every show, we end with a really important Bible verse that we ask all of you, no matter what you're going through, to just take the time, as Psalm 46:10 says, and be still and know that he is God.